helps to tell the truth faster.
This is Stuart Altshuler, and I am a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles. This is a show that works dealing with mental health issues. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free, but the question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? And we're dealing with mental health issues from a more holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit. And this is a live call-in show. And before I even tell you tonight's topic, I'm telling those of you in the Phoenix area that the local number is 480-874-1311. That's 480-874-1311. If you're listening via the internet, as I know some of you are from your emails, the toll-free caller line is 1-888-437-7660. That's 888-437-7660. And I hope some of you who are listening tonight will be calling in. I have no guest on the show tonight. It's just going to be me chatting away. And tonight's topic is when life is in ruins. You have not been able to watch television or listening to the news on the radio or read any newspaper for the last 2 weeks without hearing about these horrible fires in my home state of California. Now, about 3 months ago, actually in July, I bought this wonderful A-frame, three-bedroom cabin up in the Lake Arrowhead area, thinking that if I rented out a few weekends a month, I'd be able to at least get up and escape the city and be up in the beautiful trees and forests and just this beautiful area up in Lake Arrowhead. Well, it was just about ready to go on the rental market when fires started a couple of weeks ago. And as you know, if you've listened or read anything about this, Lake Arrowhead was one of the endangered areas up there. In fact, Crestline and Running Springs and Cedar Crest and almost to Big Bear. The fires have been destroying homes all up there, as well as the one down in San Diego, Simi Valley. It just seems like being here in L.A., even though the fires themselves were at least an hour's perimeter around us, the sky here was darkened. You could smell the fires burning. You could see them on the horizon. It was just an amazing, sad, and overwhelming experience to be here. But the added pressure for me was the fact that, well, here I finally had the opportunity to buy my dream cabin, and now it's being threatened with destruction. I'm one of the lucky ones. The north shore of Lake Arrowhead, as far as I know at this point, the fire never got there, but literally, from what I've seen on the maps, the fire came to within a mile of where my house was located. Mile's not a great distance for a fire that was burning the way it was to travel. And obviously I had to stop and think, well, I could lose this home. Well, I could lose this house. Let me change this. I could lose this house, and that would be sad. But it was a house to me. It was the second house one I haven't had a chance to emotionally attach to. It was not my primary residence, and it really made me stop and think and my heart open to those people who lived up in Lake Arrowhead and all the surrounding areas, the people down in the San Diego area and all the other places where these fires were burning, where these were not just their houses, these were their homes. These were the places where they have memories, where they attach to raising their children or living for any length of time, where all of the possessions that are meaningful to them reside along with them, where every room may hold different memories for them. Now, as I'm saying all this, those of you that are listening, try and relate. If you've never experienced a tremendous material loss, and this is what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about material loss. Talking about the loss, the devastating loss of one's home or major possessions in one fell swoop. Think about what's happened in your life that you could relate even closely to. For me, it was a robbery of my house when I lived in South Florida. where for years afterwards I'd go looking for something and realize, oh my God, I hadn't realized that was gone too. You know, they took my college ring, my high school ring, silver dollars from the 1800s that my grandmother had given me when I was a kid, certain articles of clothing that were valuable. They ransacked the house, and it was a real violation. And it was certain things that were very sentimental to me that I found missing, that there was anger, there was sadness, there was grieving. Certainly not on the scale of what these people with these fires have gone through. I had the threat, when I bought a house in Florida, when I lived in West Palm Beach, I had this scare within the first month of moving in. We had a hurricane coming in, and I lived in West Palm Beach area. And within a month of moving into my first home, my first house, my first home, the first one I bought, here we are, here I am boarding up the windows thinking this whole thing could float away. I've had close scares. But stepping back and thinking of what it must be like, what these people have endured. And I know if you're listening in Arizona, you know that there have been fires around you, and maybe you've been in that. And maybe it hasn't been a major disaster like these fires. Maybe it was just your own home burning down. You know, electrical fire that started, or whatever the reason. Maybe it was a loss like that. Think for a minute. And I know if you have a heart beating in your chest, it's impossible to listen to these broadcasts on the TV or the radio and not have a sense of compassion, or maybe even a sense of terror. A lot of emotions have to come up if you're at all human when you think of the loss these people are enduring. That's what we're going to be talking about, the psychological and emotional and spiritual aspects of this type of loss tonight. And speaking of loss, I'm actually dedicating tonight's show. My friend Jim Terusa in Florida called me tonight, and his mom passed away, Marge Terusa. So to him and his family, they're experiencing the loss today of a loved one. And I just want to honor that today and let them know that my heart and thoughts are with them. And as we honor them and the grief they're going through, and think about what everyone else is going through, the difference between that human loss, and 22 lives were lost in these fires too. One fireman, others from heart attacks, others horribly burned in their cars or in their homes trying to escape the flames or trying to save their homes, and the fire just gets out of hand and they can't get out. 22 deaths. 3,200 homes so far accounted for that have been destroyed in all the surrounding areas. 750,000 acres destroyed. So now we're talking about precious woods, even though up in the mountains here with the drought and the beetle blight, you know, one of the reasons for the fire being that big was because so many of those pine trees were dead already from the beetle blight that it spread that much faster. But when you think about 750,000 acres, when you think about the wildlife, you know, there have been a lot of articles in the LA papers about the destruction of the wildlife, those that have survived. We're going to talk about that later. You know, endangered species and some endangered plants, all the stuff wiped out in the course of a week or two, when so much energy has been going into saving species of wildlife and plant life and things like that. You know, it reminds us, I think, of the fact that holding on to things and having expectations that life's always going to go in a certain way, in a certain direction, you know, we're constantly getting reminders to let go of those beliefs, to try and stay in the moment as much as possible, because the moment's all we have. None of us know how much longer we have to live, what's going to happen from day to day. And this is a very important thing, and this is what people are dealing with all over California. Now, some of you listening may know people who have been struggling with this in the last couple of weeks. I'd love to hear from you. And what you know about it, or your questions about this type of loss, or to share with us your own experience, whether it's an earthquake or tornado, hurricanes, natural disasters, weather, floods, landslides. That's what we experience in this country, natural disasters until 9/11 in Oklahoma. We we're going to take a short break here. And if I haven't brought all of you down by discussing all this, then I'll be hoping you stay tuned to continue with Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. Tonight we're talking about when life is in ruins. Now, many of you may have felt that way just over life situations from time to time, but we're talking tonight about grieving over the loss of one's home, over material objects. And we're going to talk about, well, I am talking first all about the traumas and the problems people are facing. And by the end of the show, we're going to be talking a little bit about how to make some healthy response out of this, and the difference between people that stay stuck in the trauma of this and how people turn it around into something more positive. So again, if you feel like calling in and participating in tonight's show, a local number in Phoenix is 480-874-1311, 874-1311, and toll-free line, if you're outside the Phoenix area, is 1-888-437-7660. There was an article on Thursday, last Thursday, October 30th, in the LA Times, and the title of that is When History is in Ruins. And in there, they quoted a number of psychologists, one of which I tried to get on the show tonight, but she wasn't available. And, you know, they talk about how dealing with this type of disaster is not necessarily something your mother prepares you for. And basically, in terms of the fact that when people lose their home, when it's so totally destroyed, whether it's a fire like we've been having in California, or floods, earthquakes, tornadoes, terrorist attacks, and remember, this stuff like this happens all over the world, you know, because of warfare and terrorism. You know, we're looking at natural disasters, even though some of them were arson. But it's in a sense, psychologically and emotionally, it's like losing your history, and that's the way a lot of people tend to react it, because, like I said earlier, our home embodies our history. The years we've lived there, the things we've accumulated, the emotional and memory attachments we have to certain things, whether they be positive or negative, it's still the continuity of our lives are usually, is usually manifest in the things we surround ourselves with and the dwelling that we live in. And the memories of either raising children or parties that we've had, friends visiting, certain traditions and rituals that we adhere to in our home, whether they be religious or just day-to-day rituals that, that we have, certain chairs that we're comfortable in, and, you know, all sorts of things like that. So it's basically losing your history. And I'm going to read one chapter here. In recent decades, psychologists have had the opportunity to interview people who have lost their homes in California fires, in hurricanes along the eastern seaboard, in tornadoes through the Midwest. The monetary value of what's destroyed is important, as are the means to rebuild. But studies suggest that the mental shock of losing a house and recovery from it have more to do with how well people understand what psychological support a home provides and why. The article goes on to say, I think we forget that we're all intensely physical beings. This is a quote now by a psychologist, Ellen Block, at the California School of Professional Psychology in Alhambra, California. She says, I think we forget that we're all intensely physical beings, and after negotiating the same space year after year, the house itself, its nooks and crannies, become a part of who we are, our identity. She goes on to say, we may go to one room to be with friends, another place to be alone. The physical architecture becomes embedded in us. And this tremendous feeling of disorientation comes from standing there and seeing only the sky and all the private spaces exposed, gone. And grieving over objects, the article goes on, is hardly mere materialism, experts say. On the contrary, it is a healthy response to losing hard evidence of our own existence and history, and distracts attention from the disaster itself. And another study in 2002, researchers at the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing interviewed 440 people in the Philadelphia area who had lost their houses in fires. A year after the tragedy, a quarter of the people were still highly distressed, they found. They tended to be people who were trying to come up with explanation for the fires, searching for answers to questions like, why me? This is a quote from Arian Holden, who's an associate professor of nursing at the University of Pennsylvania. This kind of casual searching was highly associated with distress more than 13 months after the fire. Now let's talk about that why me thing. Now here, you know, I've seen interviews on TV of people who have gotten back to their homes and have been in tears. I think one of the potential advantages of being in a disaster like this, if you're going to lose everything, is that you have, and you're not the only one going through it. You have a sense that this is a shared tragedy. There is a sense of connection and community, even with people that you may not have known, because they understand. And yet there are certain people, you know, that get caught up in the why me and see this as some, what did I do wrong, you know, that this is some sort of punishment. And are searching so hard for an answer to that they get stuck in it, which maintains the depression, which intensifies staying stuck in a point of their grieving, that they're staying in the anger, they're staying in the distress. And for a longer period of time after the disaster, they're still having difficulty getting back to their lives. Now, of course, life will never be the same. Every major experience we have changes us profoundly and subtly. And this is one of those things that, of course, is a profound experience. But there is no answer to the why me. Fire, you know, why did the fire, if you look at some of the maps in the neighborhood, it's like there may be 20 homes burnt down and one still standing without even being touched. Or there may be a whole neighborhood where not a single home was touched, but somehow an ember flew through the air, landed on one roof, that one house burnt down, and no other house in the neighborhood was damaged. This is not God saying, this one's for you because you've been a bad person. This is up to you how you handle any disaster. And it's a grieving process like any other, and in some ways like no other at the same time. The grieving is a healthy thing and a necessary thing. It is a loss. It's important to do some ritual. And I'm saying this, and to be honest with you, this is one thing that I've not heard anybody talk about, is the importance of ritual. You know, to have some sense of funeral or memorial for the possessions, for the life as we knew it. To sit down with family that survived and invite friends somewhere, or do it at someone else's house, or at the site of the loss, and do a sharing, just like we do when we've lost somebody we love, like my friend Jim and his family is going to be doing later in the week over the loss of Marge. You know, to sit around and say, I remember when we had the graduation party. I remember this. I remember when we first bought the house. You remember when we blah, 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 blah. And just going on with acknowledging what this home has been, what the loss is about, and having a memorial and doing some kind of ritual is as important about this, I believe, as with the loss of a human being or a pet. Now think about that for a minute. how better a way to reach some closure, or to at least start that process, than to do it with loved ones around you? Maybe a whole community or a whole block or a few neighbors getting together to do the same thing. And sharing the memories of when we moved in here and you came to greet me. You know, or how welcome I felt and how comfortable when it's a new neighborhood and we all moved in together and started getting acquainted. It's part of the grieving process. It's as important as anything else people may be doing. And it's actually something I'm going to be suggesting because, in all honesty, like I said a few minutes ago, it's one concept I've not seen written up in any article or mentioned on any news coverage about this, is the importance of ritual around the loss like this. Think about it. How many of you have ever done that? You know, even if it's about a car accident, what's wrong with the loss of the vehicle that maybe you felt real attached to? It's a way of letting go. So, 3,200 homes. That means at least 3,200 families no longer have a roof over their head. That's at least 3,200 people plus partners, spouses, kids, grandparents, whoever, have all been attached to that home. There's a lot to put back together. What would you do? What would you be doing right now if this was your home? Where would you be? Who would you be with? Where would you turn for support? We're going to take a break right now and leaving you with that to think about. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles, and this is KXAM in Phoenix. So if you're wanting to call in tonight and continue and participate in this discussion about disasters and lives in ruins, the number in Phoenix is 480-874-1311. Toll-free number is 888-437-7660. Now, the other part of this are the support people. It's not just people who have lost the homes. If you think about the firefighters, the police force, the utilities people, evacuation center volunteers and staffers, it's a trauma and a disaster for all of them also, obviously. I mean, first of all, the firefighters, the police, the utility people are out there actually risking their lives trying to save these homes. And so many of them that were interviewed on TV were clearly distressed and moved, not just because they were so overwhelmed by the fire, but because they knew and understood the loss. This is something that they experience every day, whether it's a single house fire or whether it's something like this. The grieving that goes on with the loss of a person's home. And I would think it's something like a doctor that goes into surgery and the patient doesn't survive, that even though they did the best they could and they know that, there is certainly remorse and sadness about not being able to save the individual. And I've seen so many of the firefighters interviewed that were at a loss and sad about not being able to save more of the homes, even though a sense of satisfaction when they were able to save a community or save a single home, there was still that humanity in them that they're seeing such devastation and knowing that these are not just dwellings. I've heard a lot of people, a lot of the firefighters correcting interviewers that these are not just dwellings, these are people's homes and just the empty lot with the chimney standing meant that there's a family who doesn't have that home, and the firefighters are keenly aware of this, and, you know, obviously they deserve a lot of credit for putting their life on the line. In fact, one firefighter was actually killed fighting a fire down in the San Diego area. And another side of it is the insurance adjusters, even on this end of it. There was a long article in today's paper about the fact that, you know, these insurance adjusters may go in and deal with a single family home, go in and do that, but many of them said that this is the most difficult and hardest thing that they've ever had to deal with. A quote from Saturday's paper, the LA Times, in an article called A First Step Towards Recovery, insurance adjusters try to bring some good news to homeowners who have lost everything. And one of the insurance adjusters said, "This is 10 times bigger than anything I've ever worked before. This is huge." And the article says that this one adjuster, Karen Staker is her name, in a typical month, Staker processes 3, maybe 4 damage claims exceeding $100,000. By Thursday morning, after 72 hours in Southern California, she was working on her 5th major claim of the week, each one for a total loss of hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now, if you can imagine, while these are people who get out there who are actually, like the article says, bringing people who are devastated maybe some good news, that the fact that at least they're going to be able to pay off their mortgage and rebuild and get compensated for the loss, they understand the immensity of the grieving that's going on around them. And the article talked about how a lot of these insurance adjusters sometimes are sent, very often, especially in a disaster like this, many of the adjusters are out there from other areas all around the country and may not be home to their own families for 2 or 3 months before all the adjusting is done and all of the claims are being processed. So they're doing their job, but at the same point, you know, they're sacrificing a lot for the sake of those that have experienced such a horrible loss. And they're seeing it, and it's impacting them and affecting them. Similarly, you cannot be around this much grieving and devastation and be human and not be affected and impacted by it. Now, many of you have probably seen pictures on TV or in the newspaper of people standing in the middle of the rubble of their home holding a pot or a dish that they found and thinking, well, what good is that one dish going to be? You know, or holding a photo that they may have found or a doorknob or whatever. And I know I've had the thought too. It's like, what's the point? It's just a dish. The rest of the set's not there. It's not like this is something that's going to be useful or anything. But if you think about it, and I have to think about it, and I've done some reading, that there's this overwhelming desire to find something. And I've talked about continuity, something that represents the continuity of their lives. And the LA Times article I was quoting earlier says, one single item found in the rubble could be extremely meaningful. And not that the article itself was meaningful, but meaningful in the sense of there's something that is speaking to that continuity. Something that they have to hold that represents this home and the experiences that were once part of that place. And so, you know, it seems strange that people were making this little pile of a plate from this thing and maybe, you know, a doorknob from inside the house and, you know, something else that didn't burn. And to us looking at it, it seems kind of strange and seems kind of futile and sad. But it's these individuals, like I said, trying to take with them something that represents the life that they lived there, the experiences that they've had there. And it's an important thing. It's like to say, well, my life did happen in this place. And the article was interviewing somebody else that had experienced disaster previously, and the woman says, I saw a woman on TV yesterday who was very upset that she'd lost a picture of herself and her husband in the fire. And she said, I had to look away. She hasn't begun to face the 150 million other things that are gone forever. And like I said earlier, it's like when I had that robbery and all of a sudden I go looking for something, you know, sometimes a year or two later, and not realizing that that thing that I hadn't used that often had been taken. And there was that sense of rage and anger that would come up all over again, you know, because it was this reminder of this event, this robbery. So these people are not even going to have that because they're not even going to still be owning the clothes to find a piece missing. It's all gone. Now let's talk about the children. There's an interesting thing that the psychologists have found, and that is children and teenagers, while this is disastrous for them also, tend to, not all of them, but the majority of them tend to deal with the loss a bit easier than their parents. Part of this is because they don't have as long a history with the house. They don't have, especially young children. One of the reasons why, well, let's see. One of the reasons is that, like I said, they don't have the history of the house. You know, they haven't grown that attached yet, and they may, you know, it's like a security blanket. Well, kids hold on to that, and if they lose it, they're traumatized. For an adult, everything in there was that security blanket. For a child, especially a young one, they've been able to let go of these things. There is not the same emotionality. As long as mommy and daddy are still around, that's the most important thing to young children. They understand the trauma. They understand the devastation. They see mommy and daddy upset and grieving, and they've lost their room. On the other hand, though, they tend to be more resilient in a situation like this. As this article from the LA Times continues, this is one reason why children, as terrified as they can be, often are quicker to recover from a devastating house fire than many adults. Less of their history has gone up in flames. In a study by a psychologist named Schreiber, after the Laguna Beach fires here in California a number of years ago, children and adolescents were about half as likely as adults to report symptoms such as sleep loss and concentration problems 6 months after the disaster. Russell T. Jones, a psychologist at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia, who has made a career of studying response to home loss, said those hit hardest are the most vulnerable people, solitary people without friends or family to help, the poor and uninsured, the individuals with a history of psychological problems such as depression, whose sense of helplessness is confirmed by the disaster. What some tell us is that this is the worst thing that ever happened to them, and they feel sure it's going to happen again, Jones said. So there's this reinforcement of impending doom and the continuation of it, that it's going to happen again. Their lives are already feeling vulnerable. Their lives are already feeling unsafe. And here's this disaster that just confirms all that, and it reinforces it, and they come out of it feeling more unsafe. So children tend to respond and recover faster. The more vulnerable, particularly adults with problems to begin with, tend to hold on to this longer. So we're going to take our final break here and come back in a moment and talk about how to get through this faster and how to make some positives out of the losses, which is really what all of our work is about anyway in therapy. So stay tuned. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM. We'll be right back. Up high. Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster. Welcome back to the show. And tonight I've been talking about when life is in ruins, grieving over the loss of material things and relating it very closely to the massive, disastrous loss of life and homes from the California fires. And I've been talking a lot about the trauma itself. Now, what about the results of the trauma? What about the results of this loss and the disaster? And I've talked about the risks of people who hold on to this too long, who are stuck in the grieving and the negativity and all of a sudden feeling like the world is no longer safe. That's one option. And that's something all of us probably can relate to a certain extent. But people often, those that have a healthy shift from this, can take a disaster like this and turn it into something productive. Now, I'd be worried about somebody who did that immediately. I know very few people except, you know, very centered, ascended masters or gurus, people who have really worked a lot, they go through the grief, they may pass through it a lot faster. But I'd be very worried about people who all of a sudden from the whole thing have a major smile on the face unless they're very pleased to have let go of all of this material stuff. There is a healthy, normal grieving thing, and that's why I actually recommend having some kind of memorial for the loss of a home and of the possessions. But it's the people who are able in an appropriate amount of time, and again, that word appropriate is different for everyone. But within a few months, people need to be focusing on rebuilding, getting back into life. And obviously, that's going to have to happen within even a few weeks. You know, whether you have a job you need to get back to, or kids that need tending to, living arrangements that you need to plan. All these things have to be focused on, which, you know, thank God to the insurance companies and FEMA and the federal and state government that are showing up to offer financial and emotional support for people to get things working right away, to get things moving right away. That means focusing on the healing, focusing on the future, and moving forward. Now that comes in different ways to different people. For some people they're doing that, but it's just kind of like rote at the beginning because they're still grieving, but they know these things have to be taken care of. But there are a lot of people who at a certain point see a loss like this as an opportunity to reinvent themselves, to reinvent their lives. Some people I've actually known have lost their home, saw it as a way to kind of rebuild the home they always dreamed of. You know, they're starting from scratch. You know, all of a sudden they have the bigger kitchen they always wanted, or more rooms that they needed, or the house that had certain problems, all of a sudden they have this new house without the structural problems or whatever, something new and fresh. And for some people it's about appreciating things a lot more in terms of what's going on in their lives. For some people, when they've had a disaster like this, I've seen them make major career changes also, because life's too short. We never know what's going to happen. Why am I still in this job that I hate? And they start either go back to school or they find a job that they enjoy more. They are not willing to put up with that sort of stuff as much as they were before. And for many people, it may have been, you know, let's take that trip to Europe, or let's take more time for ourselves now than we did before. Well, we took so much for granted, you know, let's take those weekends away once a month. Let's go for our walks in the evening on a more regular basis. Let's you know, whether it's travel, whether it's getting back to their hometown, some people decided not to rebuild in that location. They may have sold a lot. Maybe it was, you know, their way of seeing that they wanted to move for a long time. They didn't like the community. They didn't like the environment. And this is a way that pushed them to either move back to their hometown or maybe to move on to a different community. But they weren't making the effort before. So now they see, well, this is the sign. You know, it's like, I have a choice now. I don't have to rebuild here. I can build somewhere else with the money I get from the insurance and just sell the lot. Whatever. That they see it as an opportunity to really examine the life that they've been leading and get the counseling that they need, see the psychologist or the psychotherapist that would be most helpful, and really work through the choices and decisions they have in their lives. And this, to me, is one of the major positive outcomes from a disaster like this. People taking stock. They no longer have material things to take inventory, but they're taking inventory of their lives. Something all of us need to be doing on a regular basis. All of us. Are we happy? Why aren't we happy? What's making us happy? What can we do to make life better for ourselves and our family and our loved ones? What can we do to have more loved ones in our lives if we're feeling lonely? So when it comes down to it, what I'm talking about with people dealing with disaster, they're being forced now to take a look at all this stuff. Don't wait for a disaster to happen before you're forced to really examine things, which is what most of us do, unfortunately. It may not be the loss of a house, but most of us wait for a major crisis to hit before we really force ourselves to make a decision that we knew we needed to make long before. Use these other people's suffering as a chance to take an honest look at yourself and see what's going on in your life that needs changing. Take an honest look at what's going on in your life and appreciate it more if there are things you really value. Who's in your life that you forget to tell that to on a regular basis? And I'm going to say it to my brother to honor him today, because today's his birthday, my brother David Altshuler. So I want to put a good, great happy birthday. He's in New York. A great happy birthday to him, and I'm glad he's in my life. He's always been a real support, and I love him a lot. So on that note, happy birthday, David. And I'm asking all of you to tune in again next week. This is Stuart Altshuler, and Tell the Truth Faster at KXAM. See you next week.